Welcome to Tip TV Finance, and making a welcome return is the chairman of JML, John Mills. How are you today, John?
Fine. Nice to be back.
Right. Every time we speak to you, there's something momentous going on. What have you done now? What have you done to us? The new president, one we didn't expect.
Well, I think that's right. I had a friend who was trying to get the bookies to accept a double, that there'd be Brexit and Trump as a president, and the odds were enormous.
I called that in May.
Yeah.
I was getting rotten fruit thrown at me on both counts, but the point here is that I said that it's a result we weren't expected, but it was a result we were told not to expect, which is even worse, isn't it? Really,
I think that's right. I mean, I think that the whole of the establishment, both sides of the Atlantic, got this one wrong. They underestimated just how much support that Donald Trump had. And the result was one which none of the polls, none of the pundits expected.
Well, my spin on that was that the establishment didn't get it wrong. They knew that was going to happen. They did everything they could to head it off at the pass, and it didn't work. Even getting down to Bruce Springsteen coming on and doing an interview for all his fellow blue-collar Americans to vote for Clinton. So they knew that it was going to happen, especially after Brexit. They had a pretty good warning, and so they put through everything. Said, "We're not going to get it right. We're not going to make that mistake that they did in jolly old England. We're going to go for the full Monty here," and it blew up in their face.
Well, I wonder if you're right about that. I mean, I think that they certainly put a lot of effort behind Hillary Clinton because that's the result they wanted to see. But I think most of them were still very surprised when Donald Trump came through.
That's the other thing. We haven't actually been, I mean, there's the establishment going for Hillary. But, I mean, in theory, she would help everybody win. The establishment, the rich people at the top, if you're down at the other end of the ladder, if you're one of the have-nots, she'd be there looking after you, she'd be good for you. So she should have been somebody for everyone, really, shouldn't she?
Well, I think the trouble is she was far too identified with the liberal establishment, with Wall Street, with Goldman Sachs. And this just wasn't what people wanted. I think the sort of Clinton roadshow had run out of steam. There were a lot of personal things that she'd done which created distrust. And all this combined together to produce what I think the liberal establishment thought was just a really major upset. And I think they're still in denial about what's happened.
And that's the other thing. We now know from Brexit and from the Trump victory what the establishment is and what it stands for, which were very well defined. It's a bit like the negative on a photograph or something like that. Mm-hmm. You see exactly what they're going for, what they think is best for us. And I mean, is it true that you think? Do you think it's true that they've actually harmed, you know, the have-nots? They've created, you know, the have-nots. Because the have-nots are blaming globalization. They're blaming the fat cats. They're blaming whatever it is. Are they correct?
I think they are correct. I think the trouble with the liberal establishment is that they paid no attention to what they were doing in terms of competitiveness with the Far East. What they did was to allow the cost base in the West to get to a point where huge swathes of manufacturing went to the Pacific Rim. And this deprived large numbers of people, particularly in our erstwhile industrial regions, of decent jobs. Employment in manufacturing went down by two-thirds between 1970 and 2015. And all these good jobs in manufacturing were replaced by relatively insecure, low productivity, low paid jobs in
the
service
sector.
That's right. And no wonder people feel fed up.
And what's the answer? Is it Trump or is it something else? Or is it nothing to do with Trump?
Well, I think Trump has capitalized on the discontent that was there very effectively. What do I think ought to be done to try and deal with these problems? I think we need to have a really hard look at economic policy, on competitiveness, on the exchange rate, on monetary policy, on evening up the distribution of manufacturing in the world, and to get some of this back to the UK to provide reasonable jobs for people who are outside London.
But isn't it, the other thing is, I mean, let's say the globalization part of it is clearly migration, people coming to this country, say in the last 20 years, 5 million extra people. You apply for a job now, you know, there used to be 100 people applying for the same job, now there's 1,000, whatever. So you're driving down, there's competition for work, so if you can get the job, even if you get the job, it's paid the same as 20 years ago, for instance, the same in my area, it's the same probably in many other areas, unless you're an entrepreneur. So what's the answer? I mean, you can't, I mean, the immigration has been a touch paper for all this. How are you going to stop that? You're going to say, well, that's it. No, that's your lot. There's no more coming in. I mean, it becomes very contentious indeed, doesn't it?
It is difficult. And first of all, I think that everybody who's here already has got to be allowed to stay. You can't start discriminating on that front. I think you can put some restrictions on new people coming in. I think the real difficult area is unskilled labour coming in from countries where wages are low, which produce a lot of competition. There's very little discontent about skilled people coming to the country. And I don't think you could stop immigration completely. Don't think we should do so. But I do think you could cut it down a bit. And that would help enormously in dealing one of the areas of discontent about globalisation.
So it's the unskilled area, which is you know, the classic Brexit and Trump voter, really, the Midwest person and the rural UK person.
I think that's right. And I think if you've got an endless supply of very cheap but very willing labour, this is no incentive to invest, and our rates of investment are very low. So I think if there were some restrictions on on immigration, that this would probably be a benefit to the economy in terms of pushing people towards more labour-saving investment.
I mean, my pet theory, which hasn't really been highlighted that much, it came in a bit with the Carney May issue. I think May mentioned this, but having the zero rate interest policy that we've had since 2008, if you're not on the housing ladder, you know, you're looking at people who, you know, your brother, your sister, your mother, who've got, you know, they paid 250 grand for a flat 10 years ago, and now it's worth, you know, $1.5 million. And you're sitting there and having paid rent for all that time, you're crying. And then the other issue, all those are the savers who worked all their life, they saved up $1 million, $500,000 in the bank before they were getting 20, 30 grand a year. And you could, you know, that was probably good enough, if you were mean, to live on. And now you're getting zero. So at an instant with that policy, the unintended consequences of that, apart from helping the fat cats and bailing out the banks, you alienated a lot of people.
I think that's right. I mean, I don't think you can go on with interest rates at a quarter. So
but that has been something which hasn't been discussed. Nobody said until 2008, this is our policy or this is my policy. It wasn't the Gordon Brown policy. It wasn't somebody. You can't actually point the finger at anybody for that policy.
No, I think what you can point the finger at is the fact that people were obsessed with consumer price index inflation, but they paid no attention to asset inflation. And it was asset inflation which, more than anything else, generated the inequality which has been so much the subject of recent discussion.
So perhaps if they hadn't, you know, if they'd raised interest rates at that time, which they normally do at the end of when the bubble bursts, the end of most cycles, the rates have been raised, I think, apart from the 1930s, that might have prevented this whole liberal political class going down the pan, or appearing to go down the pan now.
Well, it might have done, but I mean, I think what actually happened was that the huge balance of payments deficits there were between the West and the East during the 2000s sucked demand out of the economy, which could only be replaced by more and more borrowing. And that was triggered off by these very low rates of interest. And if you put the rate of interest up at that time, I think the economies would have tanked. And Alan Greenspan and all the rest of the people who were involved and in charge didn't want that to happen.
But that always happens at the end of the cycle. That's capitalism, isn't it? Why didn't we take that this time?
Well, I think part of the problem is that there's...
The fall would have been too hard.
I think that's right. And it would have come at a time when all the problems about derivatives and so on materialising as well. And we could have had a really, really bad dip down. As it was, the dip down was pretty substantial. But I think the real problem is that the recovery from that has still been pretty anemic and hasn't lifted all the boats in the sea. And there are still lots of people now with lower real wages than they had 10 years ago. And I don't blame these people for being angry.
So finally, your Prime Minister Mills or your President President Mills, what would you do? What's your plan for the next 4 years? Putting you on the spot, obviously.
Well, I think what I would drive for more than anything else was trying to get the UK economy more competitive. I think that's largely an exchange rate issue. I'd like to see the country being reindustrialised. I'd like to see a much higher level of investment than we've got at the moment, less accumulation of debt, not running balance of payments deficits of 6% per annum, and more equality and a better deal for all the people who've lost out on globalisation. That's the Mills strategy.
What about the Northern Powerhouse? That was a good one.
I'm not sure how much difference that'll make. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea, but I don't think that's going to get to the root of the problem.
Very sad for George Osborne that you say that, but hopefully he'll have some kind of legacy. John Mills, Chairman of JML, thank you very much for coming in today.
A real pleasure.
Thank you.